This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
We're going to let freedom ring everywhere we go. We must reach across the table and let freedom ring.
And let freedom ring. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. That, of course, was Bernice King. Wednesday at the 50th anniversary of the historic 1963 Civil Rights March on Washington, and they rang bells from the Baptist Church, 16th Street Church in Birmingham, where four little black girls were murdered in 1963. And I've spoken from the pulpit of that church, by the way, an abortion rights event. And so Bernice was standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial at the same spot where her father, Martin Luther King Jr., gave his I Have a Dream speech.
And I'm Dan Barker. We do want to let freedom ring all across America for everyone, regardless of race, nationality, sexual orientation, or religion. Today is August 31st, 2013. Free Thought Radio broadcasts from Madison, Wisconsin, which is the national headquarters of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And we're also broadcasting in other parts of the country, including in California, Michigan. Hello, all of you out in central Missouri, in New York State, and in central Texas.
And hello to podcast listeners from around the world. Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and FFRF is a North American group, the largest North American group of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics. We are today 19,940 members. So we only need 60 more to get up to 20,000. So faithful, faithless listeners, if you're not part of FFRF, every membership counts. And we'd love to speak with a much stronger voice even than that. 20,000, 25,000, 50,000 makes a big difference.
I'm sure we have at least 60 listeners to this show.
who aren't members. And we work for separation of church and state. And we'll be talking about some of our work later today.
Today, we're going to talk with Joe Muto. He's a liberal atheist who worked at Fox News. He has a new book out about his story. His book is called An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's Eight-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Right-Wing Media.
And that should be very interesting. After 8 years of hiding his true beliefs, or I should say non-beliefs, in order to keep his job, and after moving from the newsroom to work with Bill O'Reilly, Joe Muto couldn't take it anymore. He decided to go rogue. By becoming Gawker's Fox Mole, he was discovered and fired. That only took 36 hours.
That'll be a fun interview in the second half of today's show. Well, we didn't ring any bells this week, but we did drink some champagne and gave a toast to Free Thought Hall being born again at, as we announced last week, at the groundbreaking ceremony last Monday for the construction of FFRF's Free Thought Hall building expansion right in downtown Madison.
So we had hard hats and gold shovels, and we had staff, volunteers, contractors, FFRF members, principal founder Ann Gaylor at 86 actually did participate in the groundbreaking after saying she didn't think she wanted to shovel.
We have a photo of her with dirt in the shovel.
And Dan, you gave, comically, last rites to the decaying building that we're going to replace with our four-story addition.
Well, I said not in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but in the name of reason and kindness and the First Amendment. And then I said, may it rest in pieces.
So we want to thank all our members and especially our donors, those who've contributed to the building fund. We're still fundraising, and there are naming rights. There's naming rights for tiles and paving stones, and there's a lot of work to be done. They haven't demolished the building yet any day now, and it's going to be about a year to complete.
Last week, we talked about FFRF's complaint over the judge who decided a family couldn't name their baby Messiah. This week, FFRF senior staff attorney Rebecca Markert was on HuffPost Live to talk about this issue with the host Alyona Minkowski. Here are some short excerpts from that one-half-hour show.
What's in a name? Well, according to Tennessee Judge Lou Anne Ballou, quite a lot. She ruled that a mother who had named her son Messiah would have to change it to Martin. So this decision raises all sorts of First Amendment questions, as well as questions of religious liberty. So joining us for this name-calling session, we have Yohuru Williams, the director of Black Studies at Fairfield University, Rebecca Markert, senior staff attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and Dr. Monica Coleman will be joining us shortly. She's the associate professor of constructive theology and African-American religions at Claremont School of Theology. So Rebecca, tell us about what it is that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is doing. You guys are actually recommending an investigation into Judge Ballou's actions. Why is that?
Yes, we filed a complaint with the Tennessee Board of Judicial Conduct asking them to commence an investigation to see if Magistrate Ballou actually violated the Code of Judicial Conduct. We think that in reaching her decision, basing it on her own personal religious beliefs, she violated the canons 1 and 2 of the Judicial Code of Conduct. There is an appearance of impropriety here, and there is a demonstration that she's biased based on religion, and it calls into question whether she will be fair and impartial to people of minority religions or non-believers.
And, you know, how does that compare to a name like Jesus?
Our organization wouldn't object to what a parent wants to name their child. If they want to name it Jesus, if they want to name it Messiah, or if they want to name it Charles Darwin, they have that right.
Rebecca, do you have any final thoughts here on what the hell is happening with baby names?
I also am 3 weeks away from delivering my own baby, and so names have been on my mind a lot. And of course, as parents, we want something that's unique and wonderful for our children. And the state shouldn't get involved unless there is a serious risk to the child's health or well-being.
So do we get a hint at what baby names you're thinking of?
Well, we haven't agreed on them yet, so we've got 3 weeks.
All right, well, yeah, let's hope it doesn't become a legal matter, right? Because you can't agree on it. The judge doesn't have to decide.
So that was a cute interview, and Rebecca is very due, been coming into the office and helping us with a lot of issues. We'll be talking about some of those, but so that was a cute interview. And now we have some very good news. Last week, we reported that a judge had given us a procedural victory in one of our challenges of the IRS preferential treatment of churches. Well, 3 days later, we got another ruling from a different federal judge giving us the green light in pursuing another of our challenges of the IRS. We actually have three federal lawsuits against preferential treatment of churches by the Internal Revenue
Churches
Service.
And ministers. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was for three days in a row to get these green lights. It was a very big victory because, Dan, as you pointed out in our press release, what's the biggest obstacle right now in lawsuits?
Well, they're always raising standing. If they can shut the door before you even get to court to discuss the merits, if they can shut the door, which has happened to us in the past in some big cases, then they can just freeze you out of the issue. But in this case, all three cases now, in the Parsons allowance
August,
and the electioneering,
On August 19th, as we reported last week, U.S. District Judge Lynn Edelman ruled that we could continue our very hot lawsuit against church electioneering. And this is the lawsuit we filed after the presidential election, because the IRS has not been investigating or taking any action against ministers who illegally endorse in the presidential race or any other race, partisan politicking from the pulpit, tell you who to vote for, and still have retained their tax exemption. And so then U.S. District Judge Barbara Crabb ruled on August 22nd in favor of FFRF's right to pursue another challenge against the IRS. This one is because churches are automatically exempted from annual accountability requirements that all other 501c3 organizations have to meet to retain our tax exemption. And it's called the Form 990 that is huge and onerous. And FFRF is a 501c3, and any other 501c3 except churches have to file this every year to retain their tax exemption, because it guarantees that you're doing the right stuff with this tax-exempt money, which basically taxpayers are subsidizing.
And it's accountability to the public. You can go online and read our 990 forms.
That's right. And also they are public, and the IRS can disseminate them, and they tell you what you do with donations and financial oversight policies, salaries of top employees, how much of the income is used for fundraising versus mission or management. It's just basic reporting. And we are not saying we don't want to do that reporting, but we're pointing out that all the other 501c3s have to do something the churches don't. The churches are being given preferential treatment. And so it was a big, and we're also taking this case with our Triangle Freethought Association. It's one of our chapters in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we'll very, very important victories. And then we are waiting. We've put to bed our third case against the IRS, which is the Paris exemption. And Dan, as a former minister, you could maybe briefly explain that one.
Well, ministers of the gospel, including priests and rabbis, don't have to report their housing as income. It lowers their tax liability if their part of their salary designated by the church is designated as a housing allowance.
And it also means that the churches don't have to pay as high salaries, because those tax-free dollars go further. So it's also a subsidy of the church mission. And it was passed by 1954 by an act of Congress, and the purpose was to reward ministers for fighting godlessness. Mm-hmm. And there's been some weird permutations in that lawsuit, where the government is now trying to argue before the court that you and I, Dan, are ministers of FFRF, and therefore they want to throw the lawsuit out of a court because we're claiming an injury because we don't have that same privilege.
So, Annie Laurie, the government is considering you a minister of the gospel.
So we are saying, no, we don't buy that. FFRF ain't a church, and we're not ministers of FFRF, and we have no doctrine. And, you know, it's a ridiculous argument, but yeah. We're waiting for a decision on that.
So all three of our IRS cases are proceeding. The bases are loaded.
And you only have to look at Jonestown, Guyana, to see what can happen when tax-exempt churches are not accountable to the government. How a minister could amass a fortune and an armory and even all those foster children and leave the country reportable to nobody. So we really, there should be basic accountability.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio. Stay tuned to hear us talk with Joe Muto. He's the author of An Atheist in the Foxhole, a Liberal's 8-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Right-Wing Media. And this is Free Thought Radio. I am Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And that's music by Pink Floyd. This week is the 70th birthday of Roger Waters, the English singer-songwriter who co-founded the rock band Pink Floyd and was their bassist and their co-lead vocalist. He was born on September the 6th, 1943.
Roger Waters is an atheist. In addition to his role as bassist and lead vocalist, Waters wrote the lyrics to many of Pink Floyd's songs. A series of albums that the band produced in the 1970s are among the best-selling records of all time.
Many of Waters' lyrics contain Bible verses, but Bible verses with a twist, such as on the album Animals, which has the song Sheep. Those lyrics from the song Sheep say, harmlessly passing your time in the grassland away, only dimly aware of a certain unease in the air. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me down to lie. Through pastures green he leadeth me the silent waters by. With bright knives he releaseth my soul. He maketh me to hang on hooks in high places. He converteth me to lamb cutlets. For lo, he hath great power and great hunger.
He maketh me to hang on hooks in high places. Why do Christians love to talk about following their good shepherd? He just wants to fatten them up for the kill. Steve Salomson, who volunteers at FFRF's officers, came into work this week wearing a T-shirt with a photo of Sigmund Freud, face tinted pink, with the words, Pink Freud.
That's cool. He has a shirt to honor two free thinkers, Freud and Roger Waters. Anybody who thinks Freud had anything important to say needs to have their head examined.
That's very funny, Dan. You can read more about the free thought views of Roger Waters and hundreds of other historic and contemporary atheists and agnostics at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day site at our webpage, ffrf.org/news/day. You can actually get this free thought calendar delivered to your inbox every morning if you're a member.
And now FFRF has some more recent victories to talk about.
Patrick Elliott, who's one of our staff attorneys, has pointed out he's followed this situation in Milwaukee where these ethnic festival years have been allowing people to get in free if they go to a mass that's held at the festival just before it opens. And so he has ended these violations, they're violations of the Civil Rights Act. You can't give a special discount just because someone's religious. And so Polish Fest, Irish Fest, Mexican Fest, Fiesta, Festa Italiana, and German Fest all have included a worship service as part of their festival activities. And Patrick has ended all of them except I think there's one. No, I can't remember which one it is where we're still working out the details. But Irish Fest last year changed its policy from giving the free admission only to attendees who both attended a mass and donated a food item to allowing free admission to anyone who brought in a food item for Hunger Task Force that Sunday morning prior to the start of the festival. And lo and behold, it has meant a lot. The outcome was win-win-win, as our journalism intern Sarah Ucolano put it. The Hunger Task Force there in Milwaukee reported a 25% increase in donations from the previous summer. And they didn't have exact attendance numbers, but the food contributions are up 25%, and that's an all-time record for the event. So something very good has come from eliminating a civil rights violation that favored religious people over everyone else.
And for the Irish Fest, Atheist Ireland actually contributed $100 in honor of them changing that policy. The one holdout is Festa Italia, which I think they have to clear it with the Pope before they...
Yeah, I think we'll get that cleared up.
So who says atheists are not generous?
And congratulations to Patrick Elliott for staying on that.
We've talked about a complaint of the Christian cross on a Vietnam War memorial in Coos Bay, Oregon. And now the religious right's trying to smear FFRF with charges of inciting hatred against war memorials.
Yes, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has reported on this on Free Thought Radio as well, that there's a large cross with a very small base in Mingus Park in Coos Bay, Oregon, that is on public property in a public park, and it's called a Vietnam War Memorial. And so we have been complaining about that sends a message of preference to religion and excludes the rest of us. And about a week ago Friday, there was a very small explosion of some type. It's not clear whether it was firecrackers or some kind of small homemade bomb in the park, not next to the memorial. It wasn't harmed.
Well, they said there was minimal
surface. A couple of scorch marks that have rubbed off. And we condemn this violent and reckless act, but we are also having to remove from reckless websites religious right people who are saying that FFRF planted this bomb. And, of course, we're not aware of any act of violence ever committed by a non-believer in the name of keeping religion out of government. FFRF is peaceful. We simply want to enforce the First Amendment and have been a recipient ourselves of vandalism, having our banners stolen and vandalized, the recipient of many threats of violence over the years. So we know how it feels, and so we'll keep you posted on that.
Hiram Sasser of the Liberty Institute is trying to say, look, we are inciting hatred and violence against the freedoms of Christians, when, of course, we actually have a war memorial of our own. We think war
memorials atheists in foxholes
are important. So.
Speaking of atheists in foxholes, that's the name of the, what's the name of the book of the author coming up?
We're going to be talking with Joe Muto, and his book is called An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's Eight-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Right-Wing Media.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of FFRF, and this is FFRF's weekly broadcast.
And FFRF stands for what?
The Freedom From Religion Foundation.
We have with us on the phone from New York City, as we've been promising in the first half of the show, Joe Muto. Joe Muto graduated from the University of Notre Dame. I guess he's a lapsed Catholic. Then he landed a job at the Fox News Channel as a production assistant. He moved up the ranks and remained at Fox for 8 years and was an associate producer for The O'Reilly Factor when he became Gawker's Fox Mole. His book, which just came out, is published by Dutton Press. Dutton Press, it just came out early this summer. It's called An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's Eight-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Right-Wing Media. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
So you used to produce TV and radio, so you know exactly what we're doing here today, don't you?
I do. You know, it's the little pep talk you were giving me before the segment reminded me of what I used to do, basically.
yeah, getting people. Well, you also used to screen Bill O'Reilly's phone calls, didn't you, on the radio show?
right. That was one of my duties.
what a dealing job.
With his callers.
So you call yourself a godless liberal, a total non-believer. So tell us the story, kind of from the beginning. You know, how and why, and then what happened at the end.
Well, as you said earlier, I did go to University of Notre Dame, which is a weird pattern in my life of joining institutions that, you know, I'm you know, extremely incompatible with. I don't know what that is about me. So I graduated Notre Dame, and I was sort of, you know, aimless as a college senior, and I knew I wanted to go to New York City, and I didn't quite know in what capacity. So I sent out a flurry of resumes. I had a indistinguished GPA and a very easy major.
2.8 isn't that. 2.8 isn't that bad.
I guess not.
What was your major?
Film and television.
Oh.
Yeah, so it wasn't, you know. I wasn't exactly hitting the books that hard in college, as you can imagine. But, you know, I thought, you know, I was good. I'd made some, you know, I was very interested in politics and television and movies and stuff like that. So I sent out all these resumes, and Fox was the first, well, really the only ones who responded, and I was like, do I really want to work for these guys? But then, you know, I was weighing that against, you know, moving back in with my parents and living in the basement. So I was like, all right, well, let's give it a shot. Let's see how it flies. And to my chagrin and surprise, I found myself kind of, you know, liking it to an extent. It wasn't, you know, I don't want to give the impression that I was hating every minute of my 8 years there. There were certainly a lot of things I enjoyed about it, and a lot of moments that I thought, you know, were enjoyable.
Well, and the work must have been fun, all of the technical side of it, and working with those people.
Oh, sure. And as you guys know, you know, working in broadcasting is endlessly entertaining, and you get to talk about new, interesting topics, you know, every day of the week. So it's. You know, I did enjoy it on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, as long as they gave you time to sleep. I'm enjoying the book. I was hoping to finish it. I'm on about page 200, and I think there's a little bit of, you need to tell us about how it ended, but you worked with a number of the TV shows. You worked up to producer with, you know, the, what's that Law and Order show, the crime show.
Oh yeah, the lineup with Kimberly Guilfoyle. Now defunct, I guess it only lasted about 2 years.
And then with Bill O'Reilly as well. But the book, I have to say, is it's funny. You know, I was expecting some kind of an angry rant against conservatives, but it's funny. It's readable. It's laughable. I was laughing out loud at some of the stories you tell about how you have to. Well, you explain it. You're in New York City, which is like this bastion of liberalism, right? And then people ask you where you work.
Right. And, you know, if you go to a cocktail party in New York City and tell people you work for Fox News, you might as well tell them that you club baby seals for a living. You know, like the reaction you get is like, you know, at best, they'll be like, oh, that's interesting. You know, at worst, they'll, you know, they'll yell at you. They'll walk away and, you know, just ignore you, or, you know, people will get angry. Like, how can you work for those fascists? That kind of thing. And, you know, so after a while, you have to come up with these sort of responses that, you know, deflect that. You can be vague about who you work for. Oh, I work in cable news, and then, you know, shut up about it from there. And, you know, it's tough. I can imagine, you know, that there's probably very few professions as hated in this city as, you know, someone who works for Fox News.
Well, you were right there. Fox is right there on Rockefeller Plaza, right? Or near it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because I did an interview there once, and so you were right in the thick of everything.
It was, and that was part of my, you know, that was part of my excitement. I was a, you know, green 22-year-old, and I was in the middle of the, you know, media capital of the world, basically.
Now,
you know, a block from Times Square.
You said that you were, that Fox was shameless ratings chasers. Is Fox still the got the most viewers?
Yeah, they've never lost in a monthly rating to CNN or MSNBC. They haven't lost a monthly rating since 2002. Maybe it's been like a real long time. And they'll, you know, they'll lose day by day, week by week. You know, if there's a big international event, CNN will tend to, you know, their ratings spike up because CNN has much better international coverage than
and they've got more feet on the ground in the countries out there. Yeah.
Right. Fox has a skeleton crew. We have maybe, you know, 8 producers and anchors who are out of the country, and everyone else is concentrated in New York and D.C. They run a real, you know, and that's a cost saving measure. That's, you know, they're going to run it as cheaply as they can so they can, you know, and pay their people as little as possible. Except for the anchors. The anchors get paid pretty well.
Yeah, I was surprised at how little you got paid for all those years working there, doing all this grunt work for them. I was also surprised to learn, and you can tell this yourself, but here you are, this godless liberal working at Fox, and you said maybe 20% of the people were kind of keeping it to themselves, that they kind of felt the same way. But the claim that Fox News is fair and balanced, like Al Franken used to criticize, you learned that was even doubted by the people who worked there.
Oh yeah, I learned early on. It was everyone who worked there was very cynical about our motto, you know, fair and balanced. Even the producers, and there were plenty of producers who were, you know, hardcore conservative or, you know, very, you know, true believers, I call them. Even the true believers were like, oh yeah, this is all BS. This is all this is all nonsense. Everyone knows we're not fair and balanced. You know, that's just sort of the smokescreen that we give, you know, to not even throw people off the scent, because, you know, people are on to us. It's been, you know, Fox has been on the air long enough and conservative for long enough that people know what they're all about. But this fair and balanced thing is sort of a fig leaf for them. They can maintain, you know, the barest shred of credibility by not admitting that they're a partisan network.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the viewers actually believe that. I think a lot of viewers and a lot of right-wing viewers tune it in because it's their show. It speaks to their views, and to them it seems fair and balanced. They're getting back at this liberal media out there who's not representing their views.
Oh yeah, that was a widespread view amongst our fans. Anytime I talk to fans, you know, on the screening radio calls or just, you know, people would come up to you. Especially when I was back home in Ohio, people would come up, oh, I love that Fox, I love that Mr. O'Reilly, that kind of thing. And that would be the viewpoint that expressed. They'd say, oh yeah, they're the only fair ones, you know, those liberals at CNN and MSNBC are, you know, they love the Clintons and they love Obama, but Fox is the only one who's telling it like it is. That was a widespread view among the audience.
So I'm reading in your book on page 119, a very conservative O'Reilly Factor producer told you once late at night, after you had a few drinks, "We all know the fair and balanced thing is BS. We're here to give red meat to our viewers." And you said, "You mean to stir up the crazies?" And he laughed and he said, "Yeah, to stir up the crazies, because outrage equals ratings."
That is, yeah. That is always the MO, you know, especially when O'Reilly was looking for stories, you know, and we'd pitch him twice a week on these stories, and he was always looking for like an outrage angle, like, will this story make people mad? Will it make them sit up and pay attention? That's really what it is angry people pay more attention, they watch more TVs, or they watch more TV, and your ratings go up. That's the reason for the outrage. It's cynical. It's not like they want to stir up outrage for outrage's sake. They don't really necessarily want people to be in a state of constant agitation, but it does help with ratings. If you can, you know, grab someone's eyeballs by saying, you know, pointing to someone and saying, "This person is hurting you," you know, direct your scorn at this person. That equals higher ratings. That's how it works.
Well, so you were there. You were an associate producer for the O'Reilly Factor. I'm not sure how long, because Dan has read more of your book than I have. But I'm assuming you were there during this so-called war on Christmas.
Oh yeah, and that was a perennial.
Yes,
that was a perennial favorite. That cropped up every year around, you know, right after Thanksgiving. Sometimes earlier. It's
right after Halloween.
Yeah, it's like the Christmas shopping. It comes earlier and earlier every year.
Well, we got called on that a few times. Remember in Olympia, Washington, where we had our protest of the nativity scene.
Oh, that was you guys.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that was us.
And actually, yeah, O'Reilly did us a big favor, because that was a huge it was a national story because of him, and we got an enormous amount of hate mail. But we did get that moved. You know, we got the nativity. They said no more signs in the Capitol, nativity or ours. So,
of course, well, and, you know, all he's doing ultimately is drawing attention, drawing more attention to it. So, playing right into your hands, I guess. But yeah. You know, that is one of the things that stirs up more outrage, and that's, you know, atheists in particular are one of the people who, you know, I think O'Reilly would classify as a villain.
Well, let's talk more about villains and the war on Christmas and the Foxhole Media. Our guest is Joe Muto. He's the author of a brand new book called An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's 8-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of Right-Wing Media. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're talking with Joe Muto, M-U-T-O. Joe Muto is the author of a brand new book, An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's 8-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Right-Wing Media. And I have to say, Joe, this book is so accessible and funny, and your writing style, you don't take yourself too seriously. There's a lot of self-deprecating humor in there, and like you got caught in this whole story. And we want to move forward now. You were working for Bill O'Reilly, working on some of the shows, and working as a producer. We want to move forward to how you became the mole, the inside mole, and how you eventually got fired.
Well, it was... First of all, can I preface all this with the comment that this was not the brightest thing I've ever done in my life, deciding to write an anonymous column about my employer. not my smartest move. But how it all came about was I was looking for a new job. I knew after 8 years my time at Fox was done. I wasn't. You know, the thrill had worn off. It took a long time, but the thrill had worn off. And I realized I was working for this organization that I just didn't agree with and would never agree with and didn't want to be a part of anymore. So I approached Gawker. I knew some writers there. I approached them and I said, "Hey, look, you know, this is where I'm working now. I'd love to leave there and come work for you guys." And they said, well, why don't you come work for us right now and write this anonymous column? And my big, dumb ego kicked in, and I said, yeah, great idea. That'll be hilarious. Let's do that. And so I started writing this column. They named me the Fox Mole.
And Gawker is like a New York City gossip blog show. What is Gawker?
Yeah, it's pretty big here. It's like a gossip and media website. Yeah. You know, they're sort of muckrakers. Yeah. And they love to, you know, they're constant antagonists of Fox. They're always reporting on Fox News stuff.
So what'd you do?
Well, I wrote a couple funny, you know, sort of insidery columns, and you know, sort of the tone that the book, you know, took as well. I guess the columns were sort of a kernel of an idea for the book. And the idea was I'd write these columns, you know, once a week or something like that, and just sort of hide out and be anonymous the whole time. Unfortunately, they caught me after 2 days. They tracked me down because I'd given Gawker these outtakes from interviews. We had an interview with Newt Gingrich and an interview with Mitt Romney, and I'd given them sort of these outtakes. One showed Newt Gingrich getting his hair done by his wife, which I thought was kind of silly. And another one was Mitt Romney talking about how much he loves his pet horses. So I shared these with Gawker, and that's how they tracked me down. There was a digital fingerprint, or I don't even know how they did it, but that's how they got me.
Is that a crime?
You know, stuff leaks out in the media all the time. Fox certainly was not happy about it.
So what, they fired you within 36 hours, or?
Yes, I was very politely asked to leave by two security guards who deposited me onto 6th Avenue, you know, and watched me clean out my desk and then kicked me out of the building. So yeah, I was fired, and it was a big thing. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, a nice gentleman from the New York City prosecutor's office knocked on my apartment door and said, "Hi, I have a search warrant."
Oh my gosh!
I have a search warrant. Fox News is accusing you of stealing, you know, material from them. And you know, as it turned out, I hadn't. I had copied two movie clips, and you know, that were dumb and of no consequence. But you know, Fox, when they heard I was writing the book, I'm not even blaming Fox for reacting this way. You know, it's a perfectly reasonable reaction given what I was doing. You know, they were not happy about it. So, you know, they did accuse me of stealing stuff.
Well, this is the week of the anniversary of the March of the Civil Rights Act, and I'm going to do a play on that. You could say you were free at last. Free at last.
Right. I had to balance my legal issues against the feeling of relief that I got when I was finally free from the evil empire.
Now, could I ask, you must be, I mean, you've picked a really cute pun for the book, an atheist in the foxhole. But obviously, that's a pretty upfront labeling of yourself as well. So you're obviously pretty happy to be an atheist.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and which is odd coming from me. I'm a product. This is very strange. True fact about me: I'm a product of 100% Catholic schooling, Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, Catholic college.
That'll do it.
And that's what it drove me straight out of the church. Like, you know, by the time I was probably sophomore in college, I was like, all right, enough, enough. Yeah, and I'm proud of it, and I say that while, you know, I obviously coming up Catholic, I have a lot of friends that are Catholic. I have a lot, you know, family members who are still believers, and I respect them and give them their space. But I have my beliefs, and I am a firm believer in the mission of your organization, that, you know, religion should be kept out of the public square. I think that's a fundamental, you know, constitutional right that all Americans have, to not be bombarded with the religion of other people.
Okay, but now that you have a criminal record, Joe, there's no way our foundation is going to be able to hire you. You know,
that was the only reason I was doing this interview. That was the only reason I was doing this.
No criminal record. And well, so I mean, in essence, what did you learn? What should the world know about Fox? I know it's in your book, but for someone who hasn't read it yet,
I think the biggest takeaway would be what we were talking about a little bit earlier, is that they are a deeply cynical organization that are that's grubbing for ratings, and you really can't take anything they say at face value because one, they're pushing an ideology, their worldview, and two, most of it is a cynical ratings ploy. If they thought they could get higher ratings by suddenly being pro Obama and pro atheist and pro gay rights, chances are they'd switch tomorrow. They'd fire all their, they'd fire O'Reilly and hire Rachel Maddow. But they made the calculation, and I think it's a correct calculation that there's more of a market out there for conservative cable news than there is for liberal cable news.
But you don't think that they also just truly have an agenda? I mean, they were very unhappy with the election results.
Yeah.
Some people at the network certainly do have an agenda, and a lot of the hosts do. But ultimately, it comes back to Rupert Murdoch, who owns it, and he's an ideological guy, but really his motivation is making money, and that's how he can run Fox News Channel, which is deeply conservative, and also the Fox Entertainment Network, which has The Simpsons and other.
Out of time. We thank you so much. We've been speaking with Joe Muto. Go out and get his book, An Atheist in the Foxhole, A Liberal's 8-Year Odyssey Inside the Heart of the Religious Right Media. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
And thank you, Dave McCann, for producing and engineering our show, recorded in Madison, Wisconsin.
Join us at FFRF.org. You can listen to the podcast at FFRF.org. iTunes, phone 1-800-335-4021 if you prefer. The September issue of Free Thought Today is available. You can ask for a sample copy, or it's part of your annual membership. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting, and our guest will be Dan Savage, who will be speaking, headlining our convention at the end of September.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us.